Have you ever gotten a gift that you returned? Raise your hand if you ever returned a gift you got. Some of you are either not interacting or you're lying. Have you ever gotten a gift that you thought you'd return and then you decided to keep it and then you enjoyed it later? Anybody? Maybe a few of you. I used to do that all the time. Especially practical gifts. You know, when you're given gifts and you're younger, you don't want anything practical. Well, most people don't. You know, very few kids get excited over shoes or sweater, something like that, especially if they're boys. You know, very few. So when you're given that practical gift, it's like, you know, you're opening your gift and, you know, everyone else looks excited and you're like, oh, thanks. I had that numerous times growing up. Boots, I got boots when I was in high school. They were like, I don't remember the name, but they're, you know, had some designer boots, and family got them on clearance, and they were all excited about them, and I was like, I have no idea why you're excited about these. I hadn't been asking for boots. I still have them, and I still wear them. I don't care that they're designer, but they're useful. They're boots. Other times like that, my parents get made fun of, especially my dad, because he'll get all the kids, and there's four of us, so he'll get all the kids the same kind of clothing item. One year it was socks. And, you know, we'd make fun of them for that. Another year it was, this year I have a feeling it's going to be sweaters. But they're nice sweaters. They're dressy sweaters. If you see me wearing a black V-neck sweater after Christmas, you'll know that's what I got for Christmas. But, you know, I use those gifts. I appreciate those gifts. Maybe not the day that they're given, but I appreciated those gifts long after they were given. It may be weeks, months, maybe even years before I appreciated and recognized that that truly was a gift and truly was a blessing. Do you have anything like that that you were given? Something that you didn't really think you'd want or need or appreciate, and then down the road you realize that, oh, well, you kind of thanked them long after the gift was given. We do that sometimes with other people and experiences in our lives. Sometimes we'll have an experience with someone, and at the moment, we won't appreciate it. Later on in our lives, God may show us that what that person said, what that person did, how they acted in your life was actually a good thing for you. It was a blessing. And you may even talk to them about it and say, you know, I didn't recognize this at the time, but I want to thank you for what you said. Have you ever done that? If you haven't, you don't have enough people talking to you and correcting you and teaching you and rebuking you. Moses is out in wandering the desert with the Israelites, and they've been out there for a month, month and a half, and the Israelites have been complaining, and they get fed manna and quail, and Israelites, you know, they're not really paying attention, they're not listening. Moses at this point is probably getting discouraged, just a little bit. But we read through the text in Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy, and we have times where Moses comes to God and says, I can't deal with these people anymore. I can't take it. And this isn't one of those passages where we're going to be in Exodus 18, but I imagine that Moses is a little bit flustered, a little bit frustrated. And they're out in the wilderness, and they're near where Moses' wife's family is from. And Moses spent 40 years after he killed the Egyptian. He was a shepherd. He had a family. We think of Moses, and he's this strong leader. But I mean, he was for many years. He had this family that he lived with, and his in-laws. He was a part of their household. And so they're near them, and so his father-in-law comes out to him. Where's his wife and kids whom Moses had sent to them? And Exodus chapter 18, his father-in-law Jethro comes and sees everything that God has done, and he praises God. That's the first half of chapter 18. And then in verse 13, it says, "The next day, Moses took his seat to serve as judge for the people, and they stood around him from morning to evening." We're talking possibly over a million people here. Over a million people. And how big is Richmond? You guys know? What's that? Yeah. 33,000? I didn't look up the statistics. It used to be bigger than that. Think about the size of Richmond, the number of people here. We'll say 35,000, just to make it easy. 35,000 people. Could you imagine all these people, all their problems, all their court cases, all their things that they want to accuse someone else of doing, and all of that judgment that needs to take place. Could you imagine 35,000 people being served by one person? I can't. That's insane. Absolutely insane. Now picture 20 times that many people. 20 times that many people. Possibly more. 600,000 men or more. A million people or being served, being led, being judged by one man. Verse 13, "The next day Moses took his seat to serve as judge for the people, and they stood around him from morning till evening. When his father-in-law, who came to visit, saw all that Moses was doing for the people, he said, 'What is this you are doing for the people? Why do you alone sit as judge, while all these people stand around you from morning till evening?'" You want to know why they're in the desert so long? That's why. No, I'm just kidding. That's a joke. "Moses answered him, 'Because the people come to me to seek God's will. Whenever they have a dispute, it is brought to me, and I decide between the parties and inform them of God's decrees and laws.'" Moses' father-in-law replied, "What you are doing is not good. You and these people who come to you will only wear yourselves out. The work is too heavy for you. You cannot handle it alone. Listen now to me, and I will give you some advice, and may God be with you. You must be the people's representative before God and bring their disputes to Him. Teach them the decrees and laws and show them the way to live and the duties they are to perform." I'm going to stop there for a second. Moses has all these people just standing, waiting for him. And his father-in-law asks him, "What are you doing for these people?" And Moses answers that is my mic cutting in and out? I try. I know it does it when I move. I'll get those kinks worked out one of these days. So Moses sits as judge, and his father-in-law asks the question. And Moses answers, "They come to me to seek God's will. They have a dispute. It is brought to me, and I decide between the parties and inform them of God's decrees and laws." So Moses is judging their actions, and he's teaching them what is right and what is good. Okay? He's judging what they're doing, because this is not just church. This is a new kind of government. I mean, their religious laws are their government. That's why when you're reading through the Old Testament and you see all these, you're reading through the laws and you're like, man, this goes into great detail, and some of them are kind of weird and confusing. That's because these laws provide not just the foundation for how they are to worship, these laws provide a foundation for how they are to live everyday life. How are they to live with each other? How are they to live as a people, as a society, as a nation? And so Moses is to teach these things to them. He's teaching them how to live. And he's judging all of their actions, all of their disputes. So he's doing two major things. Now, Moses' father-in-law, when he corrects Moses, says, verse 19, "Listen now to me, and I will give you some advice, and may God be with you. You must be the people's representative before God and bring their disputes to him." So Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, acknowledges that Moses should be doing what he's doing. He is the mediator between the people and God at this time, and between God and the people. Verse 20, "Teach them the decrees and laws and show them the way to live and the duties they are to perform. This is your calling. This is your role. This is your function that God has led you to. And so do it. Fulfill it. But," verse 21, "but select capable men from all the people, men who fear God, trustworthy men who hate dishonest gain, and appoint them as officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. Have them serve as judges for the people at all times. But have them bring every difficult case to you, the simple cases they can decide themselves. That will make your load lighter, because they will share it with you. If you do this, and God so commands, you will be able to stand the strain, and all these people will go home satisfied." Moses listened to his father-in-law and did everything he said. He chose capable men from all Israel and made them leaders of the people, officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. They served as judges for the people at all times. The difficult cases they brought to Moses, but the simple ones they decided themselves. Think about what Moses is doing here. The work that he's called to do, he's trying to fulfill it, but he's trying to do it on his own. He's trying to take care of it by himself. Jethro gives him this advice, and he says, "Do those things that you're called to do, but let other men help you do this work. Let them help you do what they can do, so that you can do what only you can do. Or so that you can do what God has commanded you to do." It's interesting, verse 23. This isn't just wise advice. Sometimes we share wise advice or what seems like wise advice with each other, but that doesn't mean that's what God wants us to do. God created us with intellects. He created us so that we can learn and grow, so that we can apply that knowledge to how we live, and that is wisdom. Wisdom is a good thing. We all know the story of Solomon and how when God asked Solomon for anything that he wanted, Solomon answered and said he would like wisdom. And so God gave him wisdom, and he blessed him with other things that Solomon did not ask for. And Solomon, this wisest man in the world, I mean, he was known throughout the world. People traveled thousands of miles back in that day. That was a chore to come see him. And yet we are told about the many times where Solomon disobeyed God, where Solomon did not listen to God and follow God's commands. Solomon was wise. He was wise enough to gain and to use what he gained to further his kingdom, to further his nation, to further his own wealth. But he did not obey God. Jethro's command, or Jethro's advice here to Moses, is to do these things, and if it's God's command, then you'll be able to stand. You'll be able to continue. You'll be able to do what God has called you to do. It's not just wise advice. It's wise advice underneath the banner of God's commands, underneath the desire of God for his people. Moses listened to his father-in-law. I think that should be a sermon all by itself. We make fun of our in-laws sometimes. In fact, I had a number of jokes as I was reading this passage. I was coming up with all sorts of good jokes. I thought they were funny. You probably wouldn't anyway, so I'm not going to share them with you. Moses listened to his father-in-law. And he did everything he said. He chose capable men from all Israel and made them leaders of the people. Officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. They served as judges for the people at all times. The difficult cases they brought to Moses, but the simple ones they decided themselves. Then Moses sent his father-in-law on his way, and Jethro returned to his own country. There are times when God brings people into our lives to speak to us, to share with us, to teach us, to correct us. And those people may not be in our lives all the time. They may be in our lives for a short period of time, a few years, a few months, a few weeks, one day. But when we talk and listen, and when we're open to listening to their advice and to their instruction and their teaching, that helps us. I titled this sermon, Shared Burdens. Preachers like to make things match together. I guess I could have gone with the gift of people to match with last week's the gift of rest, or the gift of others, or the gift of the body, the gift of the church. This it was last night actually, we met for the eldership DVD study that we're doing. And it was strong and powerful. It was convicting. It was a very good session. And there were about 8 of us there. And I highly recommend it. But during that session, we probably heard, all of us sitting there, heard different things that connected with us that we needed to learn from, that we needed to grow from, that we needed to apply to our lives or to our church. And one of those things that was brought up was something that I think that we're good at. We talked a little bit afterwards, and I mentioned that every church is good at some things and not as good at other things. That's the way it is. For some of those things, it's important stuff that those things we're not as good at, we need to learn and grow. We need to let God and transform us, and we need to cooperate with Him so that we can improve in those areas. And some of those things that we are good at, they're important things too, and other churches need to work on them and improve in those areas. And one of the things that I said that we were good at, because if you watch this DVD, there are some things that are mentioned that we are not good at. But one of the things that we are good at is involvement. We have over 50% regular involvement in serving. I'm not talking about coming to church or eating at meals. Any church can get people to come to eat at a meal. That's just the way we are. You offer food, people will come. But when it comes to serving, when it comes to working, the averages are more like 20%, even down to 10%. We have over 50% of our church members actively serving and working in ministry. I think that's a great thing. I think that's fantastic. I think we're working on sharing the workload. I think that we're doing what we're called to do. But even in those areas that we are good at, I think we need to improve. If you're not growing, you're dying. We need to continue to improve and to share. Little steps, little ways sometimes. One small correction. You'll notice that Jethro's advice to Moses was not involved and extensive. It restructured everything, but it was one piece of advice. Appoint leaders over groups. That's it. That was his advice. Appoint leaders over groups so that they can share the work. I am going to admit something here, and I didn't. This will open me up to judgment, and I'm okay with that. When Jenny was on bed rest, I did, well, with the help of family and others, I tried to keep up on the laundry and the dishes and everything else, because she wasn't allowed to do that kind of thing. Well, after she had the baby, and a while after she came off bed rest, I got busy doing other things and distracted, and so I really hadn't been doing any dishes and hadn't been doing any laundry. I'm not a big fan of those things anyways. And so I what ended up happening was I left that to Jenny to do. And when you have four kids and other projects going on, and I asked her to help with some other things, I was trying to finish the bathroom remodel that I've talked about. It's almost done. Where I've just a couple of small things left to do, and it'll be finished. Praise God. And I asked her to do other things, and left her to do those things. And when you have this many people and the burp cloths, and when Sadie spits up on every outfit every day, you end up washing twice as many clothes. And I went downstairs the other day, and I kid you not, the laundry was piled up to the laundry chute. And out and down and around. And my wife, she had been wonderfully continuing. I mean, she had been doing laundry by herself, and she'd been folding, and she'd been working on it. I just left her to it. And I realized the other day that I was letting her down. I was causing her stress. Now there's two lessons here, and I think this ties into what Moses was doing. One is her, and one from her perspective. The other is from my perspective. To take it to the text, one lesson is from Moses' perspective, and the other lesson is from the people's perspective. I'll start with my perspective, with her doing laundry, and this would correspond to the people's perspective with what they're doing with Moses. I was letting her take on that burden alone. Cause stress, discouragement, frustration, weariness. This is how people get burnout. That's the foundation for burnout. You guys know what burnout is? The foundation for that are all those things that I was causing because I was letting her do it alone. The people surrounding Moses. Jethro says to Moses, "You're going to wear out the people, wear out yourself and the people." For the people, they were going to let Moses get worn out and burn out, and let themselves get worn out and burn out.
because they were not sharing in the burden. They were not sharing in the work. The other lesson is from my wife's perspective. She was trying to be the perfect wife. She was trying to stand up under the weight on her own. She was trying to accomplish it by herself. Now, I know that no one in this room has ever done something like that. Right? But she was not only hurting herself, she was causing problems for the whole family. Because if she's burnt out, guess what? We're burnt out. If she's stressed out, we're stressed out. Moses was, in essence, being selfish. He was trying to do the work by himself. He was trying to stand up under this workload and be the man. I mean, he was trying to do it all. And he was hurting himself and he was hurting other people. There's a third lesson in this. And this is where the gift comes in. When we don't help others and when we don't let others help us, we lose out on the gift of growth. We lose out on the gift of growth. When Moses didn't let the people share in his workload, they didn't learn. They didn't grow. When we don't let others share with us in the work we have to do because we can do it or we can do it better, when we don't let them share in that work, we are taking away from them. Now, there's all sorts of illustrations we can use to talk about this. I bet everybody in here has a story of a time, or many times, especially if you're married, where you took over a job because they weren't doing it right. Whether it's dishes or clothes or cooking or cleaning or fixing something. I'd go to my sister's house and see things that weren't fixed, and I would offer to do it, and she would just get so frustrated with me for offering to do that. My perspective was, I'm just trying to help out. Her perspective was, stop trying to take over control. Stop trying to do this for me. The other side of that is we hold on to those things that we think we have to do. That we think, well, that's what I'm supposed to do. That's what I'm good at. That's my thing. I mean, think about Moses. You know, he saw the burning bush, and he had the staff that he used as a tool to display God's power, and he brought the Israelites out of Egypt, and he'd done all these wonderful things, and he was leading the people, and God spoke face to face with Moses. In fact, there's a point in this larger story later on where Moses' brother and sister complained to God about Moses, and God says, wait a minute, I speak to prophets through dreams and other messengers, but Moses I speak face to face. Don't even dare complain against him. I mean, he was the prophet of God. Face to face, God spoke with him, and God met with him in person. Something that all of Israel from that point on hoped for and longed for and looked forward to. But Moses was not able to do it all himself. So we share. We share the work. We share what's happening. And when we share, we need to share in a number of ways, not just in doing the physical. You know, I'm not talking about just physical labor here. We need to share in word. We need to share in prayer. We need to share in action. First, in word. I want to tell a story, and I asked permission to do this. I didn't really ask permission. I said, you know, I was going to do this, and they said, okay. Marcia Borden, I spoke with her this week, and she was telling about she was sitting waiting for her dad. He was taking dialysis treatment, and she was talking with another lady who was waiting, and Marcia was sharing with her about our food pantry. I don't know the whole conversation. I probably should have had her come up and tell it, but she'd probably be embarrassed to do that. So she was sharing about our food pantry and sharing about the need. At our meeting, we discussed we're not going to be able to buy everything that we have in the past and everything that we had wanted to buy. And so this month, the focus has been on cereal, any kind of cereal. And so she was sharing that need, and this person went out to their car and brought in 5 boxes of cereal. And she's telling me, that is just so neat. She was just sharing with someone else what God is doing here and the need, and they gave her 5 boxes of cereal. I must be really lame, because I would have been like, you know, guiltily, maybe I could go buy 2 boxes or something like that. This lady just goes out to her car and gets 5 boxes she had already. And then I get a phone call from Marcia two days later, I don't remember when it was, saying that she was talking with someone else about what that person had done and about the need and everything, and that person gave her 4 boxes of cereal. I think we just need to let Marcia go around town talking about what's going on here, and God will supply all the food for the food pantry. But that's a wonderful praise. But it happened because she was talking about the work of God. She was sharing in word. I'm not terribly good at that. I'm not out spontaneously talking about all these great things. I have to work at that. I have to work hard at it. But God has placed a few people in this congregation who are good at it. Marcia's one of them. If you're good at it, start doing it. Because he's called people to this congregation to do different tasks and do different works and to share in that. And for those people that are terrible at it and have to work on it, instead of wasting my time trying to improve at it, you can be accomplishing it and be getting so much more done. But when we talk about the work God's doing, that brings him glory. When we share in the work together, that brings God glory. It's not just us sitting in Sunday morning singing songs, glory to the Lord, and saying we give God glory. What gives Him glory is when we acknowledge the work He is doing. And so we need to share in word. We do need to share in action too. There's this Thursday, and it's not just the food pantry, but boy, God has led us into this fantastic ministry and this fantastic opportunity. And so this Thursday, we have too many people for our fellowship hall. Can you believe that? Too many people for the fellowship hall. We're going to bring them into the sanctuary. Now, God has brought hundreds of people to our church the past couple months. And He's bringing, I'm assuming there's going to be another couple hundred here this Thursday. And we're going to have a couple hundred people sitting in the sanctuary. And so, last minute, contact Core 22. How many remember them? Core 22, a cappella group. They came last Easter, well, it was Good Friday, and they performed a concert. Four young guys who are going to be able to be here this Thursday at 6 to sing, to talk, to witness, to teach, and even to participate. And as I was talking with one of the guys, his name's Clem, I'm telling him about, you know, the idea, just introducing the idea to him, I began to get excited. I began to get excited because these guys can share in that ministry, in that service. They can share in glorifying God. They can share in loving the people who are here. They can share in talking with them and building relationships with them, even though they're far away. But on behalf of God and on behalf of Jesus Christ and on behalf of the kingdom, they can touch hearts and minds and be a part of transforming. And you know, we've got young kids, and we've got older adults. And we've got people who are Christians and go to church regularly, and they come here to get food. And we've got people who are not Christians, and they only step in the church to get food. And we've got people that come here that aren't even comfortable waiting in here. We've got all kinds of people coming in. And we have the opportunity to share with them and to share that work with others outside of our congregation. And we've been doing that for months. I said, God, we are good at, well, God is good to us, but there are some things that we're fairly good at. Churches generally don't do things together. And to have Mount Olive come every month to prepare food, and their choir has sung. They won't be here this month. They'll be back in January. For them to do that, that's the kingdom of God breaking into this world and people loving each other and serving together and sharing what we have, not just what we have physically, but sharing the ministry that God has called us to with each other. And let me tell you, I've titled the sermon Shared Burdens. And if you go out by yourself and you look at all the things that need to happen and all the things that have to be done and all the time, the money, the effort, all the people, and you look at all of that and you will think it's a burden. But when you come together and you're serving together and you have more people getting involved and other people serving and kids, it was told the story about Adeline handing out toilet paper. I still think it's funny. It's a joy. It's a burden when we are alone. It is a joy when we share, when we are together. And when we all do our part to be a part of God's work that He has called us to. That's more than just food pantry, that's clothing bank. That's more than just clothing bank, that's being serving up here during worship time. That's more than just serving up here during worship time. That's being involved with youth. That's more than just being involved with youth. It's going out and singing Christmas carols and getting kicked out of the mall. It's sharing our lives with each other. And when we do that, we grow. God's given us a gift. When we talk about the gift of Jesus Christ, it's Christmas time. We talk about, you know, His birth. But He's given us a gift that we often don't even talk about and recognize. We complain about it sometimes. So that gift is each other. There's a joke that some people think they are God's gift to mankind. Guess what? What do you think the church is?